pop culture questions only one podcast knows. Nerds That Know, Rated R.
Minds from around the world. This is the Nerds That Know, Stash here, asking my wonderful and delicious co-hosts, what lame super suit would you have if you could have a super suit?
My super suit would not be lame, and I am delicious. Thank you for noticing.
I would have what is basically like a platypus kigurumi.
But
it would have poisonous back claw or venomous back claws, like a real male platypus.
So that would be my favorite. The requirement is lame, right?
Yes.
Power Rangers Galaxy costume.
I would try on that one.
I would have a Smurf hat of holding. And I would be able to produce any kind of berry you desire.
Oh, nice. Mine was going to be the Riddler jumpsuit from Batman and Robin.
Oh, I'd actually pay money to see that.
Yeah, but see, Stash, you're much more of like Two-Face from... what was that? Batman Forever? Batman Returns? Whichever one it was, where he's talking about the fact that, you know, it's like, it's the car. Chicks dig the car. You know, Tommy Lee Jones is Two-Face. I could see Stash wearing a suit like that.
But well, wait, I have a question.
He's wearing a suit like that because Riddler is in that one. So.
Yes, but I'm talking about the Two-Face suit.
I didn't like his suit. It looked too cheap on one side. It looked like that was plastic on one side.
I think that was the point. Was nice
suit. That's kind of what happened, yeah.
It's not my fault. The props department did terribly. But the reason
Lawn and
I
Garden meets Adam's because, family.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because we got a lame, awesome, lame new superhero show this week, and I was curious what you guys thought about it. I am speaking, of course, of Jupiter Legacy.
Oh, what wow, that was not only an intro, but that was a segue. Look at
yes, you
all, like, multifunctional and shit. You
well,
know?
I had some extra time to kill, so I thought of an intro.
Oh, and it was actually not even calling us inappropriate things?
Oh, don't worry, I thought them.
Well, of course
That intro got me engaged. I'm sure it got our listeners engaged. Listeners, sound off in the comments.
My boss pen is happy. This is my level of exhaustion when I work 8-hour nights and 10-hour days.
Well, that's a choice you make, Bobby. Like going to an island.
Okay, so.
I'm trying to keep us on task here, guys.
Jupiter's Legacy. It's written by Mark Millar, who is the writer of Wanted, if you guys remember that film, which was a horrible adaptation of the comic book, and The Art of Frank Quietly. It chronicles an entire family's absorption of powers, and it's a very interesting story, and I'm actually surprised that this is what they're doing. Because it's not like the first run, but it's a bunch of different books thrown together, and it's a very unique way of telling the story from the comics perspective.
Unique is definitely a term to use to describe this.
This is nothing like anything that we have seen for superhero films so far or series. It's not like The Boys. It's not like Invincible. And unfortunately, I'm doing like a direct comparison between those two because it's in the indie realm because it's not Marvel and it's not DC.
I don't know. It feels very DC to me.
It's shots at DC
because of the quality.
No. The characters are almost like direct ripoffs. I mean, yeah. Utopian is Superman for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Leslie Bibb's character is Wonder Woman for, and then they didn't really dive into the other characters because there's six that walk away with powers.
Mm-hmm.
And oh yeah, Mastermind or Mind Blitz or the Blender. I don't know. I forget. I forget blender. What his the Blender.
The Blender.
You start calling him Kitchen. Blender. It's fantastic.
The Blender. I don't. It's, you know, it's interesting, and I don't know how I feel about it because I watched the whole thing. I binged it all in one
sitting. I watched it all last night,
and I don't. I walked away not knowing how I felt. I like everybody involved.
I can say one thing for certain: I did not like the cliffhanger ending that they dropped it on. I felt like that works for a show we're going to get continuous episodes for over a period of time. It doesn't work as well when a whole series drops all at once.
Yeah.
It was like really rather October friction-ish. I was not pleased.
Well, and we've made the comment about Netflix in the past as to whether or not they should be dropping an entire series, an entire season all at once, or if they should follow the Amazon model, you know, or even the Hulu model and release episodes, you know, on a slower keel.
You know? I do feel like this series in particular would be better if it didn't drop all at once.
I would agree.
It just didn't end
the right way. It is very, it's very hokey, but they're trying to portray like the days of yore when it was good to be a hero. And now, you know, times are hard, but the one running thing is like the United States is always on the brink of everything going south, which I thought was funny. Like it's the darkest hour for the country. And well, it's been the darkest hour. You're 150 some odd years old, and you went through the Great War, the Great Depression, WW2, Korea. I mean, these guys have seen it all, and it's part of their powers that they have a very lengthy lifespan.
Yeah, and you know, his brother even calls him out on that at one point. It's all like, you know, I get there's the code, but...
Which is very Superman-ish, Captain America-ish kind of... Yeah. Very narrow-minded approach.
But yeah, if we had broken the code and interceded in any of these situations,
yes,
would those situations have been what they ended up being?
It's really hard to take him seriously given the costumes. Utopian's costume is just, I mean, it's right out of the comic, yeah. But it is absolutely ridiculous.
I feel like
that his daughter actually calls him out on the fact that his costume is kind of stupid.
Well, her costume isn't any better when she finally gets one.
No, not
really. Oh, no, she looks so hot in, like, slutty gear.
She is, I have to admit, she was looking pretty hot through most of her scenes. But, yeah, she does finally get a costume, and it's just as horrendous as everybody else's. Mind Blitz is, like, the only decent costume, and Sky Fox sort of okay, but
it kind of reminded me of, to be honest, like the Black Lightning costumes, where it didn't seem like a whole lot of effort was put in.
No, but I mean, I don't know when
it's like Invincible's costume before he goes to the tailor.
It's not even that bad. I mean, these guys, I mean, Frank Quietly is a great artist, and I don't know what he was thinking, if this is what Mark wanted to do for his characters, but I mean, he's done a lot of other comics, so I don't, him and Mark and Frank work together a lot, so I don't know. I think it's just that this is the take they wanted.
Well, to a certain extent, if we're being honest about it, his history of hero design is a little odd.
Yes, it is.
I mean, if you really incorporate all of his hero costumes and stuff like that, like a lot of them are just kind of
hokey.
Put together from random household objects looking.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Is there a reason why Josh Duhamel's hair has to be stringy and unwashed and uncombed throughout the entire series?
Yes.
Well, I do actually think there's good writing behind that.
And that was intentional.
Analysis of his character.
Like,
it's supposed to make him look disheveled and grungy and stuff.
Yeah, he's supposed to be kind of, the feeling I get is he's supposed to be overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And just kind of struggling to hang on. And it conflicts with his earlier persona quite well. I do like that quite a bit.
Well, no, and I think you're right. The writing that Mark does for this series, the writing itself is actually very compelling. I mean, especially when we get further into the series and you see what happens to the family, it's got a lot of impact. It's very cool, but yeah, the art is just
What do you think about the main driving force of this series being the conflict around the code?
It doesn't last long, and it gets resolved. It doesn't get solved soon enough, probably for the show, because I can see where they're dragging this not intentionally. Yeah,
and how short and disconnected it was. That doesn't play out well.
Yeah, so it leads to bigger problems, especially when they start actually diving into why everybody else has powers, when originally it was just the six of them that had powers.
Okay, yeah, because they never explained that.
They did not.
And I'm just like, wait, was that what that like wave of energy was? It's like, oh, you're a mutant now?
We don't, no spoilers, because I don't know what they're, I honestly don't know what they're going to do, because this, the show itself was like a lot of different issues put together, and it didn't follow anything like the comic, but they pulled elements from the comic.
Yeah, it didn't follow the linear, like with Invincible, it followed a very specific story with minor adjustments. This was a lot more disconnected from the source material.
Yeah, because I mean, the first series is all about them getting to the island.
Okay.
And then after that, in the aftermath of all of that, starts the next series with the kids. And it's like I said, it's very disjointed in how they decided to put this story together. But I mean, I've seen worse.
Oh,
yeah. Have you guys seen the extended original version of the Watchmen film with the animated features inside?
Yeah.
He is very strongly influenced by that. You can tell in the writing. Like, I don't know if necessarily the comic is, but the direction they took this, the way they interwove this narrative throughout to kind of reinforce the themes that they were portraying and dealing with, it was very resemblant of that piece.
And I can kind of see that. I can kind of agree with that. I don't know where Mark gets his influences. I mean, he's been a force for writing for quite a number of years, and every story that he does is more involving than the last. So we'll see, but I do like the way that they did tell this story. I like the approach. And it's something different that is friendly enough to the comic book reader. And like you, who's never read the book, you're kind of like, all right, I'm kind of in on this. I don't know if I would necessarily say it's like Watchmen, because the message that this one delivers is way different than what Watchmen gives us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that seems to be the case. I'm just saying, like, in terms of the structure of this season, it was very analogous to that cut of The Watchmen.
Yeah.
Oh, so you mean that? Well, that might not be because of Miller's influence.
No, I think it's the director's
influence. Yeah, I think that was a director decision that did that. So I'd say that the production team probably did get some inspiration from Watchmen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can see it, especially when they do the flashbacks to the depression and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very similar to the animated skits that guy was reading. So that's just something I noticed, and I was like, wow, this is, I don't know if that's the DC influence I'm feeling, but I know the Watchmen influence is definitely in this adaptation.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Like, I've never wanted to turn it off, but I never would have been heartbroken if I did turn it off.
I just wanted to see where they were going to call it, is where I wanted to see where they were going to cut it off.
Well, they did not cut it in the right spot.
No, they didn't. And it reflects a little bit from the comic. I honestly thought they were going to end it where they get the powers from the island, and I honestly thought that's where they were going to cut it off, which would have made perfect sense to me in how they were telling the story, that they get the powers and this is where they end the story.
Mm-hmm.
But then they get that further step in, and I'm just like, well, this is just like starting the next chapter to me. So it was, I don't know how quickly we're going to see a turnaround for the next chapter or series or whatever they're going to do. I'm sure that they've done two series for this.
Yeah, because it feels like they shot a whole lot at once, and then they just made an odd choice on where they cut.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see the next series relatively soon. I hope anyway, because like you, I was just like, well, that ending sucked.
Well, it makes you think that if there was production issue during the process of making it, and they literally just pushed out what they had.
Oh, that's a good point.
Maybe.
Because I know Netflix does like those around 10 episodes, and this one was 7 or 8.
And I think it was 8.
8, yeah.
Yeah.
Which a lot of the stuff they've done this year has actually been the 8.
Yeah. I wonder if it's because of production issues or if it's because they're just trying to invest a little bit less money in these series until they know if they're going to take off.
I think it's a mixture of both.
Probably both, yeah.
Yeah. It's certainly an interesting piece, however.
It's and a little bit to watch. Yeah. You got some time to kill. You got nothing else to do.
And everybody in this production, I like. I mean, I kept seeing Transformers in my head, but and then I was waiting for Iron Man to step out, you know, with Leslie Bibb, and you know, Mindfucker was just. I thought he's probably one of the best characters in the entire. He shows the most range, I think, as far as character development, next to Sky Fox.
He absolutely does. You are quite right.
I don't know. They had some Iron Man inspiration in Blackheart's design, it seemed like.
Yeah, they did.
It was certainly interesting. I really do appreciate the casting they've done. It's just strange because they have so many like actors I've never even seen before, mm-hmm. followed by like these pretty heavy hitters that are their leads. It's a really interesting spread of acting talent.
It's honestly kind of good seeing Duhamel get some work again.
Mm-hmm.
I really like him. I think that he has a lot of versatility, and so it's nice to see him doing something where you get to see, I don't know, in my opinion, you get to see him in a couple of different perspectives. You get to see him in that, you know, young kid who doesn't really know what's what, you know, back in the 20s, who still has this sheen on him. And then you still have that with the Utopian, but it's different. You know, and that's when you get that grunge kind of look that bothers me because he looks so much better clean cut.
Well, and it's funny because we don't get to see the Utopian's progression. We mm-hmm. see the very beginning of the character and how just inept he is at handling life.
Thinking, yes, inept.
Inept at handling life. Mm-hmm. And then he gets his powers and we see the beginnings of Utopian, but then we skip everything and we just see the fall of Utopian.
They didn't do a good job of progressing that story properly.
No, they didn't. And Mindfucker, you see that progression. And I think how they portrayed it, and I'm really wishing that they would have done more with George, but I know why they didn't. From the story standpoint, especially with the cliffhanger that they did, and it's okay, you know, we got the Green Lantern ring and the rod. I get it. Whatever you can think, it will do. So there's your Green Lantern.
Yeah.
In the books, in the actual source material, do you get to see how he becomes Utopian and how he ends up leading the original six?
I'm trying to remember because it has been a grip. I mean, I haven't read this series in 5-6 years now. And
to
I think
a
we
certain extent, yes.
Yeah. I mean, we get like a foothold on it, but we never see in the comics anyway. We never see it because by the time when his story ends, it ends.
Yeah.
So like, and we don't get anything in the betweens.
They don't give you a lot, which I think you hit the nail on the head, Swerve. The biggest issue that this show had was that there was too much disconnect between their source material inspirations. Mm-hmm. Like they took a lot of stuff, but none of it melted together the way that it should have. Mm-mm. And I think that was the biggest issue because there is a lot more story. There is a lot more interesting story.
There is. And I don't know if we're going to see them go back and do it or I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I know we're definitely going to go back to the fragmenting of the initial six. I know we're going to see that laid out in the next season. There's no way they're not going to show that.
Well, and I think it builds up to the betrayal that they keep alluding to, that we get like nothing and then we get the screwball at the end. So yeah. It's kind of like, well, wait a second. That isn't how you, so who is the, I mean, you're left with a lot more questions than you are answers. So
absolutely.
That was a timing issue, I think, on that one.
Maybe, I don't know. That one's so hard to call. I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know if it was timing. I don't know. I don't know what it was.
If it was, that was a misplay on the intentional part. Because it seems like it seemed like they ran out of time, basically.
Yeah.
Like they were trying to fit more story and they just ran out of time.
Yeah. So, or they couldn't get it in the can fast enough because of Rona. So
maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Either one's possible.
Yep. Oh, well, I like it. I'm going to come back for more. I won't watch it again until the next series is on its way, but it's worth a watch.
Yeah. And it'd be worth a second season, I think, for them. If they don't already have it, that they could do it. It would be successful enough, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely pioneering high enough on their charts. It's been number one since it's dropped on Netflix. So, yeah.
Which is good because Netflix just canceled
everybody.
I was going to say a handful of shows to include Irregulars, which we've talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, they canceled Irregulars, The Lost Kingdom, and The Duchess.
Yep.
And I'll be honest, The Irregulars is the only one I watched any of, and I made it about halfway through.
Well, Lost Kingdom is on its fifth season. They're getting their fifth season, and that's the end.
Oh, well, I would say that's a natural resolution for a series.
But Irregulars, they kind of talked about why they cut it, and it was an odd comparison. They compared it to Bridgerton, which is a completely different story.
Yeah, so different
because of the success that Bridgerton had versus what Irregulars had, and they didn't have a long sustaining success in the top 10. That's why they decided to cut it. So
yeah, it's almost like Netflix just put out a bunch of Victorian shows and was like, all right, whichever one does best, we'll cut the rest. Like
you're kind of right. That seems like what they did.
And I honestly think I feel bad, but I don't. I mean, I really am into Smoke and Bone way more than
Shadow and Bone.
It was so good.
I mean, I wish the books were as good as the series, but I really liked the show more than the other one. And I think it's just bad timing on Netflix, Fox. You're right. It just, how much more, you know, Victorian steampunk shows can we handle at the same time? And it not be the same story.
I'll take them all. Which is what I said last night. Boom.
Kat is watching us tonight and says that they wish that Penny Dreadful had a better ending.
Oh my God, I know. Oh, you're so right.
Yeah.
We're talking about shows that have been canceled.
But no, Shadow, like you said, Shadow and Bone, that that seems like it's going to do well. There's a lot more story there.
Yeah. And
I'm pretty sure that got enough viewership. It's been fairly consistent since it came out. So
yeah, it stayed in the top 10 for, I mean, it's still in the top 10 last year. Yeah,
it's still in the top 10. So
yeah, that's one that I had actually planned on going to bed early that night. And next thing you know, I had blazed through the entire season. And I was just kind of going, no, I want more.
Yeah.
See, I stopped about halfway through, but I'm going to get back to it. I have fatigue of that time era right now. I needed a break.
Which I get. I mean, you're also the same one who had the Marvel fatigue.
Yeah.
And it is very much a thing. You have that oversaturation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just need to take a step away.
Which I totally get. It's fine. It's nothing against it. I was enjoying what I saw.
Like I said, I will call you out if I think that what you're doing is big dumb.
I had the same response that Stash did when I first started Shadow and Bone. I was like, oh God, another one.
Yeah, but
It's not the same, and that's why I ended up kind of following up. I'm like, you know what? That was interesting enough to watch the first few. I'll finish this out and see where it goes. And it was worth it. Well, it was good.
I'm like halfway through the season, so I've put a chunk of time in.
But you know, I have to say,
and it doesn't have that YA feel that, you know,
Irregulars had.
Well, not just Irregulars, but like there are some things that you kind of, you know, it's going to have that YA love triangle kind of, okay, do we really need to go there again?
And I was going to say both of them have that YA feel. I mean, I don't know about you, but both of them
It definitely has a YA feel, but it doesn't go the same route.
Well, and I think Shadow and Bone does a better of surrounding that little bit, because there is a little bit of that teen romance feeling to it.
Right.
Yeah.
But it does enough around it and enough storytelling besides that to make it interesting.
And it's not about it.
No, it's not about it. It's about,
thank God.
Yeah. There's a couple plot points that hit on it, but the vast majority of the plot does not revolve around the romance of the story.
No. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what saved it. Because I don't think Irregulars navigated that minefield nearly as successfully as they did.
Not really. No.
I agree. So Kat is actually comparing Carnival Row to Shadow and Bone.
I would agree with you 100%. Absolutely. I don't think the characters are nearly as sexy as Carnival Row. but there are a lot of similarities, especially when you're dealing with the Fae versus the other folk on the other side of the darkness. I can't remember their name at the moment, but there are a lot of similarities that are between the two archetypes for the characters. But I think Carnival Row is a better crafted world in my mind. It's grittier, dirtier, and I think way more compelling.
And we'll have the second season of that coming out on Amazon here shortly. I don't have the exact date for that, but we can definitely pull that information. Kat is saying that she wishes Netflix could get that run of the first season of Carnival Row, but damn exclusive show drops.
Yeah, Amazon's not going to let that one go, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
Absolutely not. And actually, the book series for Carnival Row is available through Amazon Kindle and Audible as well. Mm-hmm. And it really gets you a lot more information about the characters. And those are Audible originals or Amazon originals for the source material that they used for writing the show.
It's interesting. I don't know. We'll see how this like trend continues. But speaking of trending things, let's talk about the Bad Batch.
Oh, that was
yay! So cool. I'm gonna go buy me a Lego mini set of the Bad Batch's ship tomorrow.
I tried to find the action figures because they did a release of them already. They are nowhere to be found.
Nope. Good luck. They are in the Black Series, and they cannot be found.
They were sold out day one, from what I could
tell. Yep. And rightfully so. These characters are great, and they did exactly what I thought they were going to do. And I, you know, I have no apologies. I love it. It's great. So if I can't have the figures, I'm going to have the minifigs and build me a ship.
All right, so am I the only one, though, that in watching this, you looked at Hunter and you kind of thought, why is Josh Brolin and Sylvester Stallone's son in this movie or in the show?
It's a great, great question. It's the Punisher meets Josh Brolin meets Rambo meets just about every archetype alpha male that you've ever seen in a film.
I mean, it plays well in the story, but I was just looking at the character design and I'm like, God, that looks like Brolin from Goonies and like First Blood Rambo.
Every character is so badly cliched. You got big and dumb, you got skinny and smart, you got the mutant that, you know, is just the train wreck and insecure about himself, and then you got Rambo. I mean, even the sniper is just blindly, you know, loyalist and all of that. So
yeah, that voice was a choice.
I was like,
you didn't have to go with the most stereotypical voice you could possibly find, but you did, so we knew who the bad guy was going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah, they kind of gave that away pretty quick. Yeah.
Yeah, there was no secrets in that one.
I was like, oh, okay.
You want to follow orders, don't you, sir? He reminded me of that guy whispering in the king's ear in Lord of the Rings.
Wormtongue.
That is a good pull. That does sound like that.
Didn't it? So yeah. I knew, like Stash, totally knew, there's the bad guy. He's going to be the turncoat. But later we'll see him redeem himself and probably die. So we know where his story ends, but I'm curious to see where the rest of them go. And they've already hinted at other characters from Clone Wars, like Captain Rex, who we didn't see. We haven't seen since the end of the Clone Wars with him and Ahsoka running off together or separate. I don't know how. I mean, we know where Rex ends up with Rebels and all of that with Ezra.
Yeah.
But it's the in-between that's like, okay, this is compelling. And I kind of like it. I like the clone trooper looking at the other clone like, you look familiar. You know?
That was beautiful. Yeah.
What did you guys... So, strange, like, pull here. Do you know who the first Padawan was? Was he referenced in the Clone Wars at all? Because I think that's a throw out to Rise of the Jedi or the game that just came out.
Are you talking about Caleb?
The Padawan who survived. Hunter allowed to survive.
It might be, but I don't think, because I finished that game. And the story with him and his master is different than what that character is.
This is a setup.
Yes. Because Jedi Fallen Order, he's actually at the Citadel. He's at the Jedi Temple with his master, and he sees his master die.
Well,
escapes.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm fairly certain that Caleb becomes Kanan.
And that might be, I think, closer to it with the Rebels.
Yeah. I think he changes his name after Order 66 and becomes Kanan, because I think they mentioned that at some point during Rebels, that he had changed his name.
So I think it's a throwback to that, but that means he's really young there to be in Rebels not long after that.
Well, there's a little bit of a gap, but
because that's because what are we figuring? It's 20 years between Revenge of the Sith and New Hope. Is that the timeline? So I guess maybe it would work.
I think about 20, yeah.
And Rebels goes into New Hope, kind of just a year outside of it.
Something like that, yeah, right around there is the time frame.
So, I mean, I think Hank is on to something with that one. I think that is Kanan.
If I had, because I remember them referencing something about him changing his name before and stuff like that, and it would make sense for Caleb to become Kanan Jarrus.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious
on this podcast to know anything about changing their names.
Yeah. I was just curious because his character design was very similar to what I saw in the game trailers. So
the Fallen Order.
Yeah. That's the Fallen Order guy is a different guy.
Yep.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask, since you guys actually care about all this stuff.
No. It's not that we care. It's I played the game. Screw you.
I played the game.
Yeah. And that's the only reason. It's not you care. Don't lie.
Oh, dude, I'll be 100% honest. I was so fucking bored.
During Bad Batch.
Through Bad Batch, like, I don't care at all. I watched both episodes, and I was like, there's nothing original in this to keep me entertained.
The kid looks weird. Is it my imagination? A little extra gangly, or I don't know if they just didn't render the kid head. Properly. The head is way out of proportion. I mean,
the head is so strange.
It's just like a bobblehead. I'm like, oh,
and I'm like, this is the person you're supposed to care about. You guys missed the target on this. But
you missed the target. You blew up her droid. So
that's
yeah,
you don't
sucks.
Care,
Stash. See, that's the one I'm more interested in finding out the history on. Like, how does?
Like, I think she's Omega interesting. Like, I'm curious what she represents. If she's the next step in cloning and genetic engineering,
well, that's intriguing. Seems to be the thought process, but where does that lead to?
It can't lead anywhere really interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
because like we have the arcs around this.
Not exactly. It depends on if they decide to follow Dark Empire's storyline or not, because the Emperor had clone bodies of himself in hiding. And Grandmaster Saboth, who is another clone Jedi, was placed in protecting this storehouse that the Emperor had, where all of these clone bodies of himself were stored so he could transfer his consciousness, or if something were to go wrong.
So capturing Omega would be part of that.
I'm thinking that, where is he going to get a clone body except from the cloners? And the only way that the cloners are going to do something is if they're under the direction to do it. So I don't know if this plays to that story, but it just seemed kind of like an interesting setup that why would the cloners make this clone to begin with?
Yeah, you might
be. Yeah, are the cloners going to, do they survive this?
Well, because see, that's the other thing. There's nothing of the cloners later on. They're just kind of whispered about in legend with Kamino and all of that. So they get wiped out.
Yeah, it feels like they're about to be, genocided.
I think that's about to happen. I think you're right. I think we're going to see that play out.
Yeah, I think we're going to finally learn that.
That's my problem with this series right now, is I don't really feel like anything inventive or interesting is in our future.
I would sort of agree with you, in part because I think this is supposed to just give us more of the in-between stuff. It's just a lore expansion kind of series. Like, oh yeah, this stuff also happened.
Right, but see, here's the thing. Even with all of the canon that we have surrounding this right now, there's still so much that we don't know about what happens in the universe. So there's still so much that they can tell us.
Well, and I think that's a lot of what they're doing. That's what they did with Mandalorian. They kind of filled in parts of the story. And it looks like that's what's going to happen with Bad Batch. That's probably what's going to happen with the Obi-Wan series. It's basically, we have these weird gaps of like 20, 40, 30 years, that just exist. This is filling those in, I think.
I hope it has something more compelling to tell me about this time than...
I think it will. I think they're trying to... Yeah, but I think this establishes the base ground. Filoni has been very... I mean, if there is a bigger Star Wars fan out there than Filoni, I would be surprised. I mean, this man lives, breathes. I mean, he shits Star Wars stories. I mean, let's face it. The man is just gifted in that area.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's just going to kind of softball pitch this one when it's basically a blank canvas. He can kind of write whatever he wants. So I wouldn't be surprised if something kind of, he starts slipping things in. And I know Boba Fett, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see the beginning of the Crimson Sun and the whole new underground network that gets built that later leads to Darth Maul and all of that. So
we'll probably get some more of the Night Sisters and
So wait and see. That's all I can say. Don't abandon it yet, you quitter. Nobody likes a quitter.
Oh, by the way,
I will be talking about it, so I have to watch it. But
I'd say there's one person that kind of compares to Filoni, and that's Jon Favreau.
Well, yeah, but Favreau's not involved. Well, not directly. Yeah, I was going to say, not directly. Favreau's name's not on it, but you know him and Filoni.
They're like sitting around, you know, their Legos.
He brought Filoni in for Mandalorian. I'm sure there is some sort of
You know, they're sitting around doing their own D&D, you know, throwing dice. Hey, what about this? I bet you that's how they came up with the stories as a campaign for, like, you know, Star Wars D&D. There you go.
It probably started off as an RPG, and then it turned into, hey, I have these Legos.
Mm-hmm. You want to
pull them all out?
Let's build us a world. I love it.
I mean, we'll see. I'm curious to see where it goes. Hopefully it draws me in.
Well, to be fair, Rebels started slow. Clone Wars started slow. I mean, all of them. I mean, I almost gave up on Rebels after the first couple of episodes. I was like, this is just bullshit. And
to be honest, that's how I was for like the first season of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, I was just like, this is just nonsense. But it ramps up. They always build you this nice little story.
Well, I hope they do. Any idea on how long it's going to look to be?
No.
As long as they want it to be.
I want to say it's 8 episodes or something like that. I don't remember though.
I mean, the first episode was very meaty. The second episode felt a little rushed to me.
Well, it was just so cliche. We're going to really get you off the planet. The kid's in trouble. Let's get rid of the kid. No, we'll keep the kid.
I was like, oh my god.
It's 14 episodes.
We don't need this from Star Wars anymore. We just started getting into good stuff with Mandalorian and Rogue One.
The only thing that was missing was them taking on some furry passenger as a pet. I mean, that's how bad the second episode.
Well, they kind of had that fucking robot in the first episode.
Yeah, but they blew it up. At least they had
exactly
the brains to do that. Second episode, I was waiting for them to add a furry little mongrel that they found in the farm.
Okay, so this is going to carry us through the summer.
Carry us through the summer? All right.
Yeah, it's 14 episodes. So,
all right.
It's going to carry through the summer.
That's fine. I actually was enjoying the other Star Wars stuff that they added, like the fly through of the Millennium Falcon, of the Star Destroyer, all the different planets. I was kind of more interested with that than I was Bad Batch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Worth a watch.
Well, and Kat says if we want to pull out Legos and have a Lego party, they will try to build a Howl's Castle for us. So what? It doesn't have to be all Star Wars.
All right.
So, I support that.
That would work nicely with my Lego city.
Oh my god.
I wonder if you can make it a Howl's Moving Castle, because otherwise, yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah, and it has to have the little fire spirit inside of it too. Actually just rewatched
Kelsifer Howl. Is his name.
What?
Kelsifer.
Thank you. I just
no problem.
Allie stayed over couple of weeks ago, and that was the movie that we chose to fall asleep to.
Post-COVID, we should have a party where we make food from Ghibli movies.
It will never look that good, though.
You doubt my powers.
I actually have a whole radio station set up on my Amazon Music, because Lindsay Sterling has also been featured in some of the remakes of the Radio Ghibli station. Which makes me very happy listening to the classical music versions.
He is very talented.
Yes. So,
what do we got next?
Are you handling all of our transitions tonight, or
No, because those are just the ones I remembered off the top of my head. I don't have access to my phone, so I can't, you know, peruse through our itinerary. Otherwise, I would.
You know, you could do what I do and, like, write it down. Because I actually make,
make a list.
Because that's where I actually end up with my long list of all of the hashtags of random shit that we say.
Yes, that is certainly something I could do, Bobby.
Could, but won't.
Exactly.
Okay. So speaking of random things, Stranger Things is coming out. And I know about, you know, a dozen children in my life that are super excited about this, you know, of the 13.
And I'm one of them.
Yes. You know, I actually didn't get into Stranger Things until Ella, who has guested on our podcast a couple of times, was like, Mimi, if you don't watch this, I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
Dude, aww. That show is scary as shit for a kid. Like, that would have scared the hell out of me when I was that young.
Dude, she is super into all of the horror and stuff like that. Like that is her jam. And so, like, I, during the height of the quarantine, binged the first three seasons. And that actually was a bit terrifying for me, because, you know, sitting...
I feel like these, it's like Black Mirror, that might be a bit too much all at once.
It was too much at once. But they're saying that season four... which we've gotten a couple of trailers of now, is going to be the most intense and dark yet.
As yeah. It should be.
I really like how the tone of the trailer was more in line with, like, 80s horror movies, as opposed to, like, you know, like an 80s, like, action sci-fi. They really leaned into that for this trailer, and I liked that a lot.
They definitely did.
Yeah, so we got weird shit coming up.
Felt like I'm Halloween really 2.
Yeah.
I'm really curious if they're going to go in depth into the potential, like, child trauma that all these individuals are going to experience. If they hit that really heavily, this could be an incredibly moving piece of cinema.
Well, and
I'm really curious to see what direction they go.
Well, and I think that that's exactly what we're in store for, because that last trailer with the long walk down the dark hall, I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to see more, because who was the sister that 11 ran into? 7?
I don't remember.
In season 2? So
yeah,
I think
I remember her, but I don't remember her number.
But yeah, I want to say 7 now, just because now I have 7-11 happening in my brain. But
okay, better than 7 of 9, but okay.
No, I feel like they would have avoided that intentionally.
But I have a feeling that we're going to see more siblings that made it out. I think they're all going to kind of relive their trauma, in addition to the exploration of the Upside Down and the relation between them and Russia. And I think all of this just kind of knits together with a very nice, tidy, creepy ass bow on top.
Well, and I want to know what's going on with all the bloody scenes that were flashing on the security camera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's where I'm kind of like, is this showing the escape? Is this showing the first Demogorgon attack? What's with all the blood?
I don't think it's a Demogorgon attack, because they seemed rather ill-prepared at Stranger Things 1
exactly.
for it.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. We're talking about Stranger Things.
I think it's the kids basically resisting and forming a coup and getting out with as many as they possibly could.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe 11 did some bad shit, and we're going to see her, like, work through that. And
I think
11 is the most badass of them.
Well, yeah, we don't know that.
Yeah.
But we know she's probably repressed a lot of her memories. And to your point, Bobby, she's probably smoked a few people and she just doesn't remember.
Well, Daddy. That's why I bring up the Demogorgon idea, because I was thinking maybe there's just lost memory. Like, gone.
Yeah, but the scientists would have been ready for it. They wouldn't have blindly, hey, let's send another guy in there on a wire.
Well, see,
let's see what happens.
Well, see, but maybe none of them knew what happened. Because it looks like whatever happens here happens in this room all at once.
Maybe.
So maybe there is like something snapped into the universe and then just wrecked shop and then ditched.
Well, we don't know how old Eleven is in the trailer that we saw. She might be still a little munchkin. She could be closer to her age when she escapes in Stranger Things 1. Who knows?
Yeah, we really don't know.
But I mean, the hard thing is, like, you hear her voice, and her voice sounds very similar. Yeah. So they didn't do anything digitally to alter her voice, which means her age is probably pretty similar to what we see her.
That's not kind of what I was thinking. Here's the thing. With little girls especially, you know, their voices stay very similar from about age, you know, like 7 till about age 13.
Some even longer than that.
This is very true. But like, you know, whereas with boys, you know, obviously you have the voice change. You know, but with girls, that's not as much of a thing. So there doesn't need to be that much of that difference. Molly says that she believes we're going to see a lot more of the Russians and what's happening with the sheriff.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Also, at Con a couple of years ago, she saw a dope Demogorgon cosplay. So we've seen a lot of 11 cosplays, you know, with the bloody nose and the
Eggo.
Yeah. Especially like it when I saw the one kid who actually turned the Eggo box into their purse to carry around for the day.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, if you have to carry it around with you, make it useful. I like that. You know, necessity is the mother of invention.
It's yeah, true. I have an Arcanine cosplay where I have a stuffed Arcanine and I'm going to split the back and put a little pocket in there just big enough to fit like my cell phone and my wallet.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So Spirit now makes the Eggo purse. Molly, Miss Molly Mayhem is actually a manager of a Spirit Halloween down in New Orleans, and you know, hooks us up with all of the great costume pieces and wigs and leggings and tights and accessories and such. So we love her dearly. Plus she's on the board for Pet Play Palace, which I will shamelessly plug until the ends of the earth. And since she is now chatting with us, it is a perfect transition over to the Sailor Moon trailer that dropped. Because Miss Molly will be Sailor Moon in the photo shoot I was talking about, which we're doing next week, Saturday. So, which is why when I saw the Netflix trailer pop up, I'm like, oh my God, how appropriate is this? I've just been rewatching all of the original, Sailor Moon cartoons in the English dub as well as in the original Japanese, because I like how different the storylines are between the two on the same episode, whether you're watching the dubbed version or not.
Fox, you started this series, did you not? Started rewatching Sailor Moon, did you not?
I did. I was really super into Sailor Moon as a kid. And I tried rewatching it as an adult, like the original version. And I just couldn't get into it. But man, it was great for nights when I couldn't sleep. I would just like go down on the couch and start watching Sailor Moon. And I'd be asleep like 10 minutes into the episode. It was great.
Yes, I do remember walking downstairs to get ready to go to work and you were on the couch. Yes, that was very entertaining.
Yeah.
So, does this trailer, is it a new movie? I'm sorry, I didn't actually...
It is a new movie. It's a new Sailor Moon movie.
And is it put on by...
It's a Netflix original movie.
A Netflix? Interesting. That is so interesting to me that they're branching into that direction of anime, because they've been hitting their own special anime or their own unique IP anime very hard for quite some time. Well, it's honestly the direction really, that's been working for them.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting to me because the Sailor Moon cartoon is available on Hulu. It's not available on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Netflix has been doing that their own Pokemon series.
Yep.
As well. So
have they really? I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. They did the not Origins. What the hell was it called?
I don't remember. But I know they're like three seasons, four like seasons in on that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this,
I think for Netflix it's any port in the storm at this point.
Well, I mean,
at this point, Tank.
They did say they were going to release a new movie every single week this year, so
yeah,
they're probably seeking out whatever they can.
They aim to hit that quota.
Oh, yep. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I don't know if that's the right direction for them to go as like a producer and developer of cinema. I mean, I'm sure they'll see success, but I'm thinking of the Invader Zim movie that they made.
Yeah.
I know very few people actually turned around and watched that. I mean, I was very ecstatic and enjoyed the hell out of it, but
I watched it. I watched the shit out of it.
Yeah, but I don't know a ton of people who did, and I'm wondering if they're going to have the same kind of response they did on that.
Well, and to be fair, I don't think that these cartoons are aimed towards us. When you think about what's out there for kids cartoons, I mean, you guys had Sailor Moon when you were younger, and it's not there now. So I think Netflix's idea of filling that niche with Pokemon, with Sailor Moon, I think is actually genius, because nobody else is doing it. No one else is catering to the younger crowd, with the exception of Disney. And they canceled the one kid show they had going on with DuckTales, and that's done now. So I think in the grand scheme of things, this is a good play for Netflix and for kids. I don't see a lose in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not the original Sailor Moon. This is Sailor Moon Crystal, which is slightly different. You know, it's kind of like the different kinds of Power Rangers, but it's still the actual same Sailor Scouts. Sailor Moon was really, really big when we lived in Hawaii. Like, everybody had their favorite Sailor Scout, and like, if you didn't go to school the next day and know what happened in that episode of Sailor Moon, then like, you better sit by yourself at lunch that day. Like, it was the thing.
Oh, I think you hit the thing on comparison on the head then with Power Rangers.
Yeah, yeah. It sure sounds like it.
Yeah, way to
Power
go.
Rangers was also the thing when we were stationed in Hawaii. So, like, you know.
That's because Power Rangers was everywhere when it came out.
This was the
original Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, back the first in, couple series were
back
really
in my
weird.
Day. Yeah.
Back in my day.
But I think it's Netflix. I think the idea behind the Sailor Moon is the same idea that they've had with everything else they've done. They are going into every genre. They're taking the shotgun approach, and they're just throwing it out, see if it catches on. If not, they cancel it.
I think they just want to control it.
But yeah, I think that what you're going to get with the Sailor Moon movie is what you're seeing right now from Molly and myself, because she has been posting a whole bunch of chats over here. Sailor Moon is me all day, every day. Yay, Sailor Moon. And Crystal versus Eternal are different. You know, love Sailor Moon. But you're getting that nostalgia thing from especially, you know, people in our age demographic who were right at that age when Sailor Moon was the thing.
Oh, yeah. And nostalgia sells, always.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, it got me watching that Invader Zim movie.
Which was like, great. Shut up.
I definitely understand the approach. It's interesting that Netflix is kind of going in that direction with that specific IP. I mean, I feel like there's better ones. I don't know if better is the right word.
I don't think better is the right word.
That would fit Netflix a bit better.
Well, I mean, just look at their anime offerings, though. It's kind of all over the place.
But it really is. Like, the Way of the House Husband just got added, and it is so different from anything else. But then they also do...
They had everything.
Castlevania, they did the Blood of Zeus. I mean, those two are very...
Castlevania, cool. Like...
There's...
We don't speak about Castlevania.
Even Blood of Zeus was really good, actually. I like that
one. I know. They're both very good, but tonally, they're very similar to one another.
Well, and even the syndication stuff, though. I mean, look, they bought up all the Pokemon stuff. They did Seven Deadly Sins. They did Baku. They did, you know, just shotgun anime.
Exclusive rights to, like, the dubbing of Food Wars, if that is ever going to happen. It was supposed to be dropped beginning of this year.
I'm sure it'll happen. But they really just do, like, here's everything. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Does look phenomenal.
Because don't they have? They also have the He-Man animated thing coming up on either this
this summer.
That's Kevin Smith too.
Yeah.
But one of the beauties of Netflix and of Amazon is they're not super, like, you know, fine-tuned or tailored down for a specific genre the way like Disney is. Disney Plus is very much, you know, one type of streaming service. It is very unique to, you know,
Disney fans.
Well, and I was actually waiting
for them I was going with it, but yes, to Disney fans.
Yeah.
Well, and I was waiting for them to finish like Voltron, because they did like the Lions, and then they hinted at, you know, the land, sea, and air teams. And I honestly thought that's what we were going to get next, but I haven't even heard a whisper.
That was a while ago, too.
That was a while ago. I haven't even heard a church fart on what was happening with that. So, you know, don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, but So I appreciate the fact that Netflix is branching out and doing a little bit of everything. And I'm looking forward to the Sailor Moon movie. Speaking of Amazon, they are working with quite the cast of Anne Hathaway, Helen Mirren, and Morgan Freeman on a sci-fi anthology called Solos. And I'm telling you, just the three of them in a movie together makes me want to watch it. Like, I don't care if it's the three of them sitting around and bullshitting. I will watch it.
Well, I'm wondering, and Anne Hathaway.
Actors.
Right?
What I'm wondering, like, are they all together, or is it all like they're just part of the cast?
I think they're solo anthologies.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure
that's exactly what it is. It is solo anthologies.
It's like Love, Death, and Robots, how they're all kind of the same series, but they're all separated into their own thing. Yeah. I want to say
character-driven stories, each from a different perspective in a different moment of time.
Yeah. I want to say I actually read this anthology. Maybe not this specific one, but one that was very similar in concept. And I personally, like, I love this type of storytelling. These short vignette-style movies and clips, they're very powerful, and they give a lot of potential for unique stories.
Okay, so it's 7 stories, 30 minutes each.
Yep.
Morgan Freeman, Anne Hathaway, Helen Mirren, Uzo Aduba, Nicole Beharie, Anthony Mackie, Dan Stevens, and Constance Wu each get their own story.
Yep.
That's what's happening.
Absolutely. And like I said, it sounds really interesting to me.
And it's exploring the connection of humanity and the meaning behind human connection brought by each individual story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Freeman is a character with Alzheimer's. Mirren is a woman alone on a space shuttle.
I don't want any more details. It's like, I think it's I'm just excited for this storytelling because so far no one outside of Netflix has really tried it. And it's going to be nice to see a different company work in this direction.
Oh, the Anne Hathaway one looks cool.
Yeah, that, like I said, you had me at Anne Hathaway, and then I saw the story, and I'm like,
oh, yeah, it's being directed by Zach Braff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they all being directed by the same people, or is each one uniquely directed?
It looks like
each one's uniquely.
Each one is.
Oh, so it's essentially Love, Death, and Robots.
It does live action.
I love that.
Yeah, live action. I think they
kind of compared it similar to not the way that the filming was done or anything to Hunters, the Amazon original show about the Nazi hunters.
Mine Hunters.
Hmm?
Was it Mine Hunters? No.
It's just called Hunters.
No, just called Hunters.
All right. No, it was a great show. I loved it.
But they kind of compared it to, you know, like it's a specific time, a specific perspective. And well,
it's the same creator and showrunner. It's David Wheel who did the Hunters story. Mm. He's also doing this apparently.
Do we have a time frame on when this is going to be released?
I just saw it. May 21st is the first one.
Holy shit! That's
quick.
Sweet. Yeah, that's. 2 weeks?
Next Friday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, that's awesome. And they are doing it. They're doing an episode a week.
That's what it looks like.
I don't like that. Not on this style. Like, I don't know if this type of storytelling will be conducive to that.
Well, I can't tell you 100%. It doesn't specify, but it says Solos will launch May 21st, so it might be the full drop.
I don't think it will. I mean, we might get the first three episodes, but we won't get the whole thing.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe they'll do what they've been doing, and they'll give you two or three episodes to start out.
I don't know if this works quite as well for an idea like this.
Well, especially because they're not connected stories.
Exactly. I
like having things episodic. Like, I like that they'll be disconnected and that, you know, we'll go back each week and learn something new. And especially since the cast is such a star-studded cast, you know, that you won't be bleeding Helen Mirren into Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, the cool thing about vignettes like this is analyzing them against one another and seeing the reoccurring themes and stuff. And if you spread this over 7 weeks, you're going to lose so much because so much of it's going to fade because you just can't hold that much stuff in your short and long-term memory. It's going to be harder to really analyze each of these stories and compare them in a very detailed and nuanced way.
Well, we'll wait and see what Amazon is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have not specified which way they're going with that.
All right.
So we also have, let's see what else is going on over here. Talked about that. Red Room.
Yeah, this is a comic book series kind of coming out of nowhere, essentially. Ed Highscore, is that how you say his name? Something like that. He's actually a cartoonist, and he's done graphic novels. He's done the Hip Hop Family Tree, X-Men Grand Design, and he's kind of ventured off on his own at this point. And this is his first creation of his own, completely his own IP. And he's doing it through Fantagraphic Books. And they are already the best-selling comic in decades for Fantagraphics, and it does not release yet. It has not.
That's cool.
Well, to be fair, they canceled the horror magazine, and Fantagraphics really hasn't had a whole lot going on. So, as cool as that is, not surprising.
So I don't know much about this. Is this actually related to The Shining, or is it just paying homage with the name?
I think this is a paying homage thing, because even they've talked about it. It is going to be a sci-fi horror. It is its own new IP, so even if there is some homage to it, it's not going to be directly addressing anything. But even the ideas for the comic covers, all the covers they're doing are paying homage to other books.
Oh, yeah, and the cover art does look really cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All of them do pay homage in some way to a book previously. You know, it looks like they're going mostly off of indie inspirations,
mm-hmm.
Including like all their variant covers and all that stuff, where they're going to be just kind of saying, "Hey, this is where I come from," kind of a thing. Like, and it's a 12 issue run. It looks like the first one is a double issue, and that comes out next week, I want to say.
I think you might be right. I haven't looked at the dates.
It's either next week or the week after. But it's cool because this is, you know, you don't often see most of the time when you see new IP coming out, it's a writer who's writing new IP. It's not often that you actually get one of the artists starting a new IP.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It should be, you know, it seems like he has a lot of hope for it. And it seems like comic book sellers have some hope on it because they bought a shitload of them. So,
well, I think
sci-fi horror, this might be up your alley.
Well, and I think they're trying to like jump on the bandwagon because we had Keanu Reeves' book hit Berserker from Boom Studios.
Yeah, but that sucked.
And it did suck. Issue 1 and 2 are out, and it's not good. It's really not good.
I have more hope for this than I did for that. I will say that.
Yeah, I'm hoping it pays off better. I don't know, but I just think they're just trying to latch on to just anything, any port in a storm that's going to pay at this point.
Probably, yeah.
Well, I mean, traditionally, like, horror fans are pretty hardcore fans. Differentiate these words, but like if you're super into horror movies and, you know, stories and comics and stuff like that, you tend to be very passionate. So it's a good field to direct something as long as the quality's there.
Well, and see, that's the key. I mean, the horror fans are hardcore, but they're also very small. Critical. And very tiny. And yeah.
Especially in the comic book universe, it is a more of a small audience that you're playing to.
Uh-huh. It's much smaller than you would in like the movies or any other genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It's like horror books aren't a big seller either.
Not these days, no.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's such a visual medium now. I mean, it's their own fault. They kind of crossed over into that visual medium. They left behind the pulp, the horror comics. All of that has just kind of fallen to the wayside. And this is their own doing. And not that it's bad or good. It's just how it worked out.
Well, and kind of like what you said, like with the, you know, horror storytelling, a lot at this point is visual. I mean, I guess that's good, though, that you guys have a guy that is an artist, cartoonist. He's taking the approach mm-hmm. on this. So maybe that'll be inspirational to some people, and they'll actually dive into this book.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. Got to say, Fantagraphics.
Yep.
Well, that's everything I have on my agenda for the night. Anything else from anyone else?
No, I think that's it. Do we have any questions?
We've actually been answering them as we go. The only other comment we have from a fan joining us tonight was Banana Nesquik is not a myth. It is the best flavor.
No, Strawberry Quick kicks its ass, hands down.
I'm going to go with Smurf on this one. Strawberry's probably better.
And on that bombshell, we shall say goodnight. Be sure to drop your questions in the comments below. Give us a like, give us a share. Please subscribe to the Nerds That Know. In the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind. Good night.